Welcome to On the Mersey Beat. Now, as we all know, Liverpool dominates the music in this area. But today we're going to feature a great guitarist who came from Southport, Ollie Halsall. Now, I'm talking to Barry Monks. Barry Monks has written the sleeve notes for a lot of albums that have come out featuring bands that Ollie Halsall was in, and he's working on a book about him at the moment. Barry, why is it that so few people know of Ollie?
I think basically it's because he was a very, very shy person. He didn't really know how talented he was, I don't think. The times I spoke to him, he was quite amazed at how interested people were in his playing. And I think that's probably the reason really he never really wanted to be a superstar. Okay, well, let's hear a track that features him. This is from a Neil Innes album, so tell us about it.
Well, this is lovely little bit of throwaway rock and roll from Neil from about 1978, I believe. Lovely little guitar solo from Ollie's track called Mama B. And I actually see that CD is dedicated to Ollie Halsall.
He says, yes, Neil Innes a good friend of Ollie's, and he's spoken about him many times. He worked on most of his albums, and also on the Rutland TV show, Rutland Weekend TV. And also worked with Neil as well in the Raffles, the famous Beatles parody. In fact, there's not many people know that Ollie Halsall actually sang the part of Dirk McQuickley for the album and for the film, because he could sing it better than who's the star of it? It's Ollie's voice speeding up on that, and Ollie plays all the guitars and some of the keyboards on that.
Because Eric Idle himself has done quite a few songs.
He has, yes, he can sing, but they just didn't think it sounded quite right. I think Ollie had them.
Oh, because I wanted it to sound or sound more like that. Right, okay, well, fill us in some details about Ollie. What are his dates from when to when?
Well, he was born in 1949 in Southport in Wavell Road, if anyone knows that. I haven't been there myself, but,
you have to go to Southport if you're doing the book.
I'll have to, yes.
And indeed, if anybody knows Ollie Halsall, if they can get in touch with me, Spencer Lee, at On the Mersey Beat, here at Radio Merseyside, we'll pass the details on.
Thank you. Yeah, if someone sends me a map of Ascot or whatever, I'll come and see it, yeah.
But people who knew Ollie, people who were at school with him, anything like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah, I believe his last relation is still there. I don't know if his parents are still alive, but it's hopefully they are. They're probably still living there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so.
apparently, in South Boats and Older Bowl, and with guy called Chris Holmes, who was a cable player, and Clive Griffiths, a bass player, and they formed a band called Take Five in about 1965. They came out to London in 66 or so and changed the name to Time Box. And they had quite a lot of success actually in Time Box in the London club scene. They were great favourites of mine. Does the name Time Box mean anything? Apparently it's American slang for prison cell, but I don't think they actually knew that. It was just a nice word for the time. The Time Box, it sounds good. Okay, well, the record I know by Time Box, the record that I know best is Begging, because that was almost a big hit record.
It was, I think it got about number 36 in the charts.
And what's the story about? Why did they do it a Four Seasons cover?
It was suggested to them as a good cover to do, right, to get to the next version of it. It features only on the vibraphone, which is very good, actually.
And how did you learn to play that?
Well, that's a very interesting story. It's a very strange instrument, the vibraphone. Not best known in rock music at all, by any means. He wanted to play the vibraphone. He started playing drums originally. He wanted to play the violins. He said to his parents, can I have some vibraphones? And they said, if you learn to play them, you can have some. Which is really the catch-22 situation. So, apparently, what he did, he got some strips of paper, laid them out on his bed in the shape of a vibraphone, got some beaters with his pocket money, actually learnt to play them like air guitar, as it were, an air vibraphone. Apparently, he did this, and they brought in the vibraphone, and here we are, from where we are.
Various reasons, I don't think people thought it was right for the time. I wanted to steer them more in the direction of begging and the sort of more commercial poppy things, the stuff that they're writing, as most people at that time was more into the psychedelia and that sort of thing. Okay, well, let's hear the opening track in this Time Box album, Gone is the Sad Man. What's the story of that? Well, it's a very interesting little song, actually. It shows the sort of direction where around many people were at that time. It's a bit of psychedelia, basically. It sounds really loosely based on Baby the Rich Man by the Beatles. It's got that sort of chugging beat and features Ollie playing a keyboard and a bit of guitar. It's a just lovely little song, actually. Very reminiscent of the times. Definitely a Beatles influence in there, can't you? Now, Time Box, five members in that, how many of them came from Southport? Three of them, basically. Chris Holmes, the keyboard player, and Professor Holmes, and Clive Griffiths, the bass player, and Ollie. And they came to London and they the personal changed a bit towards the end. They had a guy called Mike Pato, a famous singer from the London club scene, and drummer John Halsey, excellent drummer, one of the best drummers of that period. And they came through as the final version of Time Box, which later became Pato after Chris Holmes left.
Right, well, we'll be talking about the Pato releases in a minute or two, but let's stick with the Beatles connection, I suppose, because that never left Ollie, as
well. No, that's right.
How did Neil Innes and Eric Idle come to recruit him for the Rattles?
It was vaguely involved with the Monty Python thing and also things like Tiswas, the famous kids TV show. Him and John Halsey were on that. John Halsey played the drums every week. And they did all the jingles for it. I think they probably messed around that sort of time. And they did the Rutland Weekend television thing. And when Neil decided to do the Raffles, he obviously looked for some musicians to help him out with it, and it was his first choice.
And I suppose Ollie as a guitarist was a right sort of guitarist, because a lot of the guitarists who came up after the Beatles in the 60s were very influenced by Eric Clapton, were very blues-based and such. And Ollie really wasn't.
That's right, he was a real chameleon, really. I mean, he could play any instrument, any style. He played a lot with people like Grimm's, Roger McGough and people like that, and Scaffold.
before to almost play any style for any sort of skit that we're doing. So he could play any style of music with a good phrase. But doing the Beatles type stuff came fairly easily to me. I think he did. I think he was great at Mara's Beatles, Paul McCartney especially. Okay, well, here's your records. So the rattles there with Major Happy, and I'm talking to Barry Monks, who's a researcher on the Southport guitarist Dolly Halsall, writing a book about him at the moment, written several sleeve notes of CDs of Feature Ollie. When did you first come across him yourself? Well, it was many years ago, about 30 years ago, when I was playing in bands myself. We played one night, was a place in Covent Garden called the Temple, and they had a good sense to go on first, so in fact we took the bill over them. But
what was the name of your band?
Dulciana, it was called. I don't know what it means, but it's lost in the mist of time. But when I first saw it, I really couldn't believe it. I mean, it was quite incredible to see him play guitar. I'd seen Hendrix a few years before that, and it's very similar feeling to seeing him. Now, I've never heard anyone play quite like that. He played like a saxophonist, basically, in a sense that he plays very, very fluently and very almost like he was breathing as he was playing the notes. It's a true jazz player, in a sense of someone like Django Reinhardt, who's always seems very similar in style. Not that sort of like 60s version of Reinhardt, I think, really. And did the rest of the group realise what a talent they got in there? I think they certainly did, yes. But in fact, Paso was such an amazing band anyway. They were greater than the sum of their parts anyway. They were quite a unique experience to see live. A lot of humour involved. A great band. Did Ollie, though, have some sort of gremlin inside him that stopped him becoming a superstar? Yes, I think he did, actually. It's interesting that when he made the first two Paso albums, he actually quite a name as a guitarist, the famous name guitarist came to see him playing in the Marquee and places like that. When he came to do the next album, it's almost on purpose he didn't play any guitar on it, hardly. Very few guitar solos, played the piano all the way through it. Almost as if he could sense the adulation, sense the feeling, and he just rebelled against it and played the piano instead. Strange. Right, so let's hear this track by Pato and give it all away. Yes, can I just say something? This is actually one of the most remarkable pieces of guitar playing I think anyone's ever put down a record. Just remember it's 1971, a long time before people like Eddie Van Halen and that sort of thing. It is probably the fastest guitar solo that's ever been recorded. And the best.
About all these friends in Southport, basically, these
Sir Abraham that is so loyal, I was mentioned, and Trevor in Cosney's toes off with a lawnmower, apparently, and the event was recorded in the Visitor paper, which is still going, apparently. It's quite nice. So he kept his route to Southport then? Yes, he did. I don't know how often he went back there, but we'll see talk about it, yes. Yeah, well, you have to find that out when you finish the book.
Yes.
I mean, that's it. I mean, you can do all these sleeve notes here and write about the tracks and everything, which you've done in a very good way, but when it actually comes to the book, you've got to get so much of the detail. And that's what I'm missing, really. I'd like to talk to some people who knew him better than I did, yes. I see some people from around here, really, from Southport area. Obviously, there's still numbers in.
Yeah.
And of course, they may have a completely different picture.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, he was a very complex personality.
I think the best way to describe him is actually a sort of bohemian lifestyle, especially towards the end.
That implies he'd be pretty unreliable.
Totally unreliable, yes. He had no regard for money, as far as I could see, the record advance they got from the first Pazzo album, which I think was about £600, he repeatedly went out and bought a Persian carpet, which is about 10 times the size of his flat. Had no use for it, we just totally just spend it. Why not, you know? That sort of thing. Also, later on, another record advance he got, Drummer Joe Horsey tells me that he bought the plans for a yacht he was going to sail around the world with it. He just got the plans on the wall, that's about as far as he got with it.
Was he married? Did he have a family?
Yes, he had a wife called Monica. And they split up sometime during the 70s. And he had two daughters, apparently, and a son. But no one was yet man's brother. Okay, well, let's move to another album that features Ollie Halston. Now, this is a group called Boxer. Now, I seem to remember an album by a group called Boxer. I presume it's the same group that was very, very controversial. It featured, I think, this is why I remember it. It featured a naked woman and boxing clubs on the first right, yes, a reproductive pose by a model called Stephanie Marion. It was a very good album, actually. I don't think the publicity worked particularly, didn't sell very well, unfortunately. It was a good album. But, they made a second album, which we're going to play next, called Bloodletting, which was partly released. It was a bit of a contractual problem, and it was never fully released till a few years ago, actually.
What do you mean by partly released?
Well, I think they'd actually broken up at the time, and the whole company wasn't sure whether to release it or not. So they'd released it in some parts of the country, not others. I think it was released abroad, perhaps. But it's never had a proper release.
It's another very good album featuring many Mike Pato songs and some covers. There's a great track on it, there's a superb cover of the Beatles' Hey Bulldog, which as many people will know is the best single the Beatles ever released. And this is Boxer doing Hey Bulldog. Now, Barry, I think I'm right in saying that Ollie Holtzman never released a solo album in his lifetime. No, he didn't, no. So, how come there's a solo Ollie Holtzman album out now called Caves? I'm glad you asked that. It came from Trouble John Otway. I've heard of John Otway. He's actually a genius. He's still playing guitar. He used to be with absolutely, yeah. Yeah, one of the few real geniuses in music, Otway is. He used to play with Wild Billy Barrett back in the 70s, sort of punkish sort of thing. He still plays and he's great. He played with Ollie for some time in around 1979. In fact, they did a tour of the States together on a cheap version on, I think it was Laker Airlines in those days, where they took their guitars and their laps in the plane and went to Greyhound buses around the States. It was awful, apparently a terrible experience of both of them, but at the time they recorded some stuff together, and Ollie had a little cassette of songs which he gave to Otway to just he might be interested in playing. I contacted him some years ago, John Otway, and said, did you have any photographs or anything? So he said, well, I've got this tape that Ollie gave me of some stuff. I thought you might like to hear it. And when I heard it, I was absolutely amazed because it was actually complete songs, studio recordings. Not particularly good quality, unfortunately, because I think this might be a copy of a copy. We had them remastered, and it's a complete album, so we released it as an album called Caves. Now, you say you haven't been able to get in touch with Ollie's wife.
No.
But surely she'd be entitled to the royalties for this.
Well, if it made any money, theoretically, yes, it's very much that if it's going to make a profit, but a superloss was in English, so yes,
But would you try and get in touch with her?
We did try. We put some efforts in the papers to try and trace people just in case there was a profit and a residue which someone had a claim on and the money is there. If someone wants to claim it, what little there is.
Right, now we're going to play a track called Summertime Kids. Anything to say about this?
I don't know much about these songs, really, because as I say, and all this John Otway, they were essentially demos that Ollie recorded. For what purpose, we don't know. They do sound like proper studio recordings. Whether he intended to release an album, I don't know, but I don't know what the songs are, just a nice sort of summary,
And what's Ollie doing on it?
He's playing everything on it. He's playing the drums, the bass, and the guitar, and some keyboards in the background, and singing the vocals and harmonies. A song that had been lost for 25 years.
Absolutely, it would have been lost forever.
Yeah,
unfortunately. And tell us about this album, because we're playing another track from it. It's on Market Square. It's a brand new album.
Yes.
What about the packaging, which looks a bit strange?
Well, it's a bright resin yellow packaging for anyone who's can't see it. And it's basically the artwork is some pictures of caves that Ollie drew. He was a great artist and he drew some wonderful pen and ink drawings of caves, and we just use one of these and colour them in red and yellow to possibly match the first pattern album, which was red and yellow as well. That was the link there, but it looks really attractive, I think.
Okay, and let's have another track from the album, First Day in New York.
Yes. Okay, this is a song which was written by Ollie when he first went to New York with Kevin Ayers in about 1976 or so.
So that's another track from the album Caves by Ollie Halsall that's in the shops now on Market Square Records. They sell far more than demos that are just going to be given to John Otway.
Yes,
I'm often wondering exactly what the story of Halsall is actually behind them, but they are very well. We did some enlargements to the tape, so it's been remastered, and it does sound very good, as you can hear.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's deal with last week's competition, which was when I had Peter Doggett on the show from, formerly from Record Collector, and he'd written his book, Are You Ready for the Country? The answer to the question was, Willie Nelson and Elvis Presley both had hits with Always On My Mind, and the competition prize is tickets to see Chris Clayton, who was also on the show last week, at the Summer Pops next Thursday. That's a week tomorrow at the Summer Pops. So who wins tickets to see him? Mr. Jay Atherton of 12 East Avenue, Great Sankey, Warrington.
Okay, well done to you.
And Mr. Michael Needham of 23 Spindle Close, Everton. Okay, and tickets will be in the post to you to see Chris Clayton a week tomorrow at the Summer Pops. Right, let's go back to Neil Innes. This is a track called Fluff On want to say about this one?
It's a lovely little bit of guitar playing, basically. What I used to do is he played on many records as a session musician. He played a total of 77 records, I think, in this country alone, which is quite extraordinary. He was in great demand as a session man. Neil used him all the time, and this is a lovely little song and a great solo. Fluffing the Needle there from Neil Innes and Ollie Halsall. We're coming towards the end of the show now. Just let me not correct something. I just want a bit of an explanation on it. You said Ollie had played on 77 tracks. Did you mean tracks or albums?
Albums, tracks.
As far as I know, there may be more actually, but I managed to collect a discography together of that many.
So, in fact, you may have played in about 500 records.
Pretty
amazing. So the discography's going to take
us that long, yes.
Indeed, yes. even though he was unreliable at times,
he must have got himself together for these things anyway, yes.
Right, and so you're interested, Barry, in anyone who knew Ollie Halsall?
Yes, please.
Get in touch with me and I'll pass that on.
If anyone wants to visit a website, which is www.zywild.com/caves. There's links to other good sites on there as well, actually.
You better say that again. It's www.zywild.com/caves, CAVES. Okay, and we'll go out with a quick minute from this. This is a new album by Pat.
It's a new album, yes.
Warts and All. And where does this come from?
It comes from drummer John Halsey, who salvages from his suitcase of goodies, and he's released it on his own record label, Admiral Records, available from his pub in Cambridge. I got the address from him, someone got to contact me. It's great, the live album of Passover.
Okay, Barry Monks, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Spencer.
On 95.8 FM and 1485 AM, live from the BBC Radio Merseyside.